Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our second day of discussions. And I'll pass straight over to Yulia to talk about business combinations under common control.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. So business combinations under common control are discussed in Agenda Paper 6. So what we would like to achieve at this meeting is to get your views on what type of information about business combinations under common control would be most useful for different types of primary users. And we also look to get your input on cost-benefit analysis. You know, what would be the cost of providing that information, and are they going to be justified by the benefits? Before we go through the slides, I would like to highlight where the board is on the project at the moment. So the board has finalized the discussion of the scope of the project, but the board has not yet made any decisions about accounting methods. We have held a series of education meetings with the board where we looked at different approaches, but we have not made any decisions, so we are getting your input pretty much early in the process, and we will feed it back to the board. So with that, turning to slide 4. So just to remind you why we are looking at this topic. As you all know, business combinations are covered by IFRS 3. So if you look at scenario 1 on slide 4, entity A acquires entity B. It is a business combination. Entity A will apply IFRS 3 and record assets and liabilities of entity B at fair values. Entity A will also record goodwill or a gain on a bargain purchase. Now, if you look at the second scenario on slide 4, again, entity A acquires entity B, but the combination is under common control and IFRS 3 does not apply. So as a result, entities develop accounting policy to account for such transactions, and entity A may show assets and liabilities of entity B at fair values and show goodwill, or entity A may show assets and liabilities of entity B at predecessor carrying amounts. So there is diversity in practice. And in addition, there is also diversity in how the predecessor method is applied. And so arguably, if you put yourself in the position, for example, of a shareholder, of non-controlling shareholder in entity A, transactions are arguably quite similar, although they can be also different in some respects, and you get different information in financial statements. So this is what we're trying to address. Now, before we move to accounting methods, just to update you on where we are on the scope, I'm moving to slide 5. So the board has decided that the project will address transfers of businesses under common control. So transfers of group of assets or transfers of a single asset, for example, investment in associate, would not be directly addressed in the scope of this project. Now, the project includes more transactions than just the transactions that meet the definition of a business combination. So, for example, if you have an existing business and you put a nuke around it, that would also be covered in the project, even though, strictly speaking, it's not a business combination. We will also look at typical common application questions. So in particular, there are some questions about what is transitory control. There are questions about how to account for a transaction and whether it's even under common control if the transaction is conditional of successful on successful IPO. So we will look at those types of application questions. And finally, in this project, we are looking at accounting by the receiving entity. And this is a very important point which sometimes causes a bit of a confusion, so I would like to be very clear about it. So moving to slide 6 now. If you look at a business combination under common control, so arguably, obviously, there are different parties involved. There is a controlling party, there is a transferor, a transferee, and there is the receiving entity. So we are looking just at the accounting by the receiving entities. Accounting by all the other parties in this transaction is already addressed by IFRS standards. Now, with that, moving to accounting methods. Slide 7. And what I would like to highlight here, I would like to talk you sort of through the differences between, or potential differences between business combination and business combination under common control and what that might mean for accounting. So if you can see the regular business combination between independent parties, So this transaction is freely negotiated. It's expected to benefit the acquirer. And normally, and IFRS 3 presumes that this is the case, normally consideration transferred by the acquirer would approximate fair value of its interest in the acquiree. And fair value of its interest in the acquiree will include fair value of the acquired business itself, plus any synergies that the acquirer expects to derive from this combination. So in terms of what happens in the accounting, we take this fair value of the consideration transferred, we recognize assets and liabilities of the acquiree at fair value, and we recognize and measure goodwill as a residual. And so what happens here, goodwill essentially captures any goodwill that was previously generated by the acquired business itself, and goodwill that is attributable to expected combination synergies. So this is what we have in IFRS 3. Now, if we move to slide 8 and think about business combination under common control, they can be different. So first of all, instead of being freely negotiated between the combining entities, the transaction can be directed by the controlling shareholder. Instead of benefiting the acquirer, the transaction can take place in order to benefit the entire group. It can take place for tax reasons, to improve operational efficiency due to new legislation requirements, for all sorts of reasons. Now, even under common control, the entities may still choose or be required to transact at fair values. And in particular, in some jurisdictions, there could be requirements to transact at fair values, especially if there are non-controlling shareholders in the receiving entity. However, if it is under common control, combining entities can also transact at book values. So unlike in a regular business combination, we cannot assume that consideration transferred would necessarily approximate the fair value of the acquired interest. And as you can see on slide 8, you can pay essentially the value you're giving up can be more than the value that you're receiving, or the value that you're giving up can be less than what you are receiving. So if, for example, you just record this transaction at cost, you will not get information about the fact that the exchange is not at equal values. Even if you apply IFRS 3 to this transaction, you would still not get information if the exchange is not at fair values, because what IFRS 3 does, it just allocates consideration to acquired identifiable net assets and measures goodwill as a residual. And I think fundamentally where we as staff are is that to ensure comparability and transparency in accounting, to the extent that such transactions are similar to regular business combinations, arguably accounting should be similar, you should be getting the same information. And to the extent that these transactions are different, we need something else, we need another overlay to provide this additional information. And of course, all that is subject to cost constraints and measurement uncertainty. But in principle, in terms of usefulness of information, similar things should be accounted for similarly, and different things should be accounted for differently. Now, if we move to slide 9, what are the options? At 30,000 feet, we only have 3 options. Under the conceptual framework, there are 2 identified measurement bases, historical cost and current value. In addition, obviously, we need to consider existing practice, and as we discussed today, entities account for such transactions under the predecessor method. We are not looking to get into details of how each of those methods would be applied at today's meeting, because if you take the cost approach, there are different approaches how you allocate cost to individual assets and liabilities. If you take current value approach, again, current value can mean fair value, or there can be some exceptions to fair value. If you look at predecessor method, again, there are different ways how that method should be applied. So today we would like to look at this at 30,000 feet. Is it cost most useful? Is it current value, or is it predecessor carrying amounts? And again, what I would like to emphasize, moving to slide 10, that we are looking at the receiving entity, and in particular, we are looking at information needs of different types of primary users of the receiving entity financial statements. So what we would like you to do is put yourself in the shoes of non-controlling shareholders in the receiving entity, what information is useful to them, lenders and creditors of the receiving entity, what information is useful to them, and then the controlling party itself. So staff preliminary views, which we would like to get your input on, are set out on slides 13 and 15. Slide 13 discusses information needs of non-controlling shareholders. As I already mentioned, because a business combination under common control may involve an unequal exchange of values, we think that that information should be provided to non-controlling shareholders. And that information can be provided if the transaction is recognized at fair value. We think that for non-controlling shareholders, such information is best provided by recognition of this transaction at fair values. And this is because non-controlling shareholders they have indefinite interest in the receiving entity, and they are exposed to the residual equity risks. So we think in that case, recognition at fair value would be appropriate. And our initial view is that if you have non-controlling shareholders, the benefits of this information will outweigh the costs. Now, if we move to slide 14, and slide 14 discusses lenders and creditors in the receiving entity. So we think that fair value information could also be useful for lenders and creditors. It could also be useful to them to know whether the exchange is on equal values or unequal values. However, we think that their information needs are slightly to be different to the information needs of non-controlling shareholders. And this is because, unlike non-controlling shareholders, lenders and creditors are exposed to credit risk primarily. They're also exposed to liquidity risk, but they're not exposed to residual equity risks. And in addition, unlike with non-controlling shareholders, the interest of lenders and creditors in the receiving entity is finite. And that's why, on balance, we think that maybe recognition at fair values is not necessary, and instead, useful information for lenders and creditors can be provided via disclosures. And then finally, moving to slide 15, which discusses controlling party. So there are a couple of main points here. So first of all, with the controlling party, unlike non-controlling shareholders and lenders and creditors, controlling party does not rely on the financial statements of the receiving entity to meet their information needs. They can already access all the information that they need because they control the receiving entity. Second of all, from the point of view of the controlling party, the transaction itself is different. So if you are a lender, creditor, or non-controlling shareholder, what you are dealing with is an acquisition. Whereas if you are in the position of a controlling party, essentially it's moving something from one pocket to another. There is no acquisition. They continue to control both of the combining entities. And therefore, we think that from the point of view of controlling party, there is no need to recognize assets and liabilities. There is no need to recognize the exchange at fair value. And instead, entities should just continue accounting for their assets and liabilities at their predecessor carrying amounts. So this is where the staff are at 30,000 feet today, and we would be very interested in your views. But maybe before we go to breakout sessions, I'd like to see if you have any questions.
Just a clarification on slide 13 of the NCI table.
Yeah.
Is your proposal then that sort of the regular IFRS 3 would apply in this case, or is there some, or are you going to make some light version of IFRS 3? What concretely would you envisage happening here?
Right. So we would need to explore whether and how IFRS 3 needs to be tweaked to reflect the peculiarities of such transactions. So, for example, in IFRS 3, if what you paid is less than fair value of acquired net assets, you recognize a gain. It's a bargain purchase. We think that this concept is not applicable under common control. If you paid less than what you received, arguably you had a contribution from your controlling shareholders. So that is one potential tweak that we would need to consider. Second of all, again, I think it's probably easier to explain if you look at slides 7 and 8. Again, if in a business combination under common control you paid more than what you received, essentially you have an element of overpayment, and capturing it within goodwill would not necessarily provide the most useful information. Of course, goodwill is subject to impairment testing, and eventually any such overpayment would hopefully be captured by that impairment test, although not necessarily, because it depends how you allocate goodwill to your cash-generating units. So again, we think that in principle, we need to think about whether we can compare the values exchanged, and if there is any overpayment, it needs to be recognized as a distribution from equity of the receiving entity, as opposed to be captured as an asset as part of the goodwill on their balance sheet. But this is sort of an additional level of detail, so we would need to think about it. Is it workable? What is measurement uncertainty? What are the costs involved in such an accounting? So for today, it's just cost, current value, or predecessor values.
Okay,
Hi, I was just curious where the project came from. Was it feedback from one of these user groups, or is it something that you've identified a gap as a...
Yes, so this project was identified as a priority research project in our recent agenda consultations, and we also had feedback outside of the agenda consultation from various parties, particularly regulators who are concerned about diversity in practice.
And actually, it's been very consistent feedback that it should be a high priority. It came up in both agenda consultations, and we're still regularly getting comments from national standard setters, from regulators and others, that it's an area that needs looking into.
Sandra?
When you're looking at entity A and the non-controlling interest, do any of the factors on the non-controlling interest holders drive your answer? So is it a non-controlling interest because it's another party in the overall group entity, which would be still a non-controlling interest for company A? Is it truly an independent third party interest? What if it's 5% non-controlling interest versus 30%? Is there any analysis to say you might have a different answer in various scenarios? What are the governance requirements of company A? I think a lot of those things should factor into some of the decision making.
And that is an excellent question, and this is definitely on our list of things to explore further, especially if we were to say that the presence of non-controlling shareholders was to drive the accounting. So we would need to be very careful about what type of non-controlling shareholders we are talking about here. And arguably, you have, you know, different scenarios. If you have a 40% external NCI public investors, as opposed to you have a few employee stock options issued to senior management. So we would need to think about it. But I think for the purposes of this discussion, let's assume that we are talking about external public shareholders that have nothing to do with the group.
Okay. Because I know there's a lot of countries that specifically require to have a few other shareholders. So oftentimes they're company employees, but...
One more question. It might be too early to tell, but should we expect, as the outcome of this project, when you clarify three IFRS, three, as a result of this clarification, whether either predecessor or current cost should be adopted or could be optioned at the end?
This is something that the board would need to consider and make a decision about it. But I suppose, given that the objective of this project is to address diversity in practice, it seems more logical, and this is tough for you, to be specific when and why a particular method would apply, as opposed to giving entities a choice. Because if we were to give entities a choice, it doesn't really change the current situation too much.
Except to the fact that right now entities do not even know whether there is a choice or not. But it's really, of course, if we have a north saying, use this or use that, would be much better.
Martin?
Yeah. I mean, we're now looking at three perspectives. That's the question of the staff. Is it actually in practice feasible that there could be three different answers?
We would need to think about it. And again, at the moment, we are at the stage of trying to understand what is the most useful information and what the costs of providing that information are likely to be in different scenarios. In theory, we could say that if there are non-controlling shareholders in the receiving entity, and we could specify some parameters around what such non-controlling shareholders should be, we would need to think about any such parameters. But we could say if you have non-controlling shareholders, you must apply some sort of current value accounting. And if it is in a wholly owned group with no external shareholders, even if you have lenders and creditors in the receiving entity, you would apply the predecessor values method. So that could be an answer, but it is not necessarily that it would be an answer. This is what we are trying to explore.
Maybe I could say the same thing a slightly different way, which is, it seems to us there's a spectrum. One end of the spectrum, you've got some substantive non-controlling interests, and you might want one answer there. The other end of the spectrum is where you have no external users at all, and the only user is the controlling shareholder. And then the question, and that it seems quite like you get a different answer there. Then the question is, what happens if you don't have any external shareholders, but you do have some external lenders and creditors? Is it more sensible for that to go with the NCI case or with the controlling shareholder case?
Suppose you go to the NCI case, would that have repercussions for how the controlling shareholder would treat it?
We're not affecting what happens at the top level. Except, of course, the balance between NCI and the controlling shareholders' interest changes, but the assets and liabilities that have been recognised and income and expense are unaffected at the top level.
Mitch?
On that point, I'd caution you on the treating lenders only and a combined NCI lenders structure differently, because it's this perception that this residual value means less to creditors than it does to shareholders, I think is inappropriate. I think that from a creditor point of view, of course, we look at things, you know, the maturity and cash flows and these kinds of things, but marginal equity value, that difference between net debt and EV or residual equity value, speaks volumes about overall credit risk.
Right.
Recovery, that overall value. Those issues are very, very important to creditors. So I'd caution you about that bifurcation predicated on that assumption that individual value is only important to NCI. We care very much about, you know, individual value.
Conscious of time, so if we could take questions that seek to clarify the questions that were being asked for the breakout, and then we can gather the views and come back and have a discussion afterwards, if that's okay.
Just on the overall approach, I am not still clear as to what is the why this issue has faced as a priority for the board. Number one. In my experience, most of these business combinations under common control happen because of tax restructuring. For tax efficiencies, companies do this type of restructuring. Number two, you are trying to address the information issues of various parties here. One is non-controlling shareholders and lenders, etc. In general, the financial statements, the information what it provides is not necessarily the market value of the organization or the company. So there is always a gap. And if you are trying to address that only with specific needs of non-controlling shareholders, I don't think you will end up successfully. I think you should be clear in your approach.
last comment from Peter.
Just a clarification question.
Yeah,
when you talk about non-controlling shareholders, lenders, and then you talk about controlling party, is that the management or is that the shareholders?
It is a shareholder, but it can be an entity. So your controlling party can be an entity or it can be an individual. That's why we're talking about.
But because the information needs of both are slightly different, right?
Yes, because if you control the entity, you already have all the information you need, first of all.
Well, as a manager, not as a shareholder necessarily, right? We produce these reports also to report to our shareholders, right?
Well,
there's a separation of ownership and management, basically. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
You have to understand who has the information to make the deals. It's not necessarily the shareholders. They rely on reports to get information, right? So when you say everybody has the information, I'm sure that everybody in the boardroom has the information, but I'm not sure that the controlling shareholders necessarily have the information. So there's a governance issue here.
Okay, that's probably an additional overlay there.
Okay. Great. Okay, thank you for that.